nabhunaktu sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Let's do verse 10.
Ahankaraye suptam
bhavedeho vyachetanah
ahankara vikasardah
swapna sarvastu jagarah.
Ahankara laye suptau bhavet dehaha api achetanaha ahankara vikasa ardaha swapnaha sarvaha tu jagaraha. Going on now, we're going to talk about the different conditions that the ahankara finds itself in. Talking in the Driksha Viveka, we are kind of dealing with the ahankara also in a little different way, so I'll just make some distinctions there. But let's look at the Sanskrit first. So, ahankara laye suptau, to both the compound and the next word suptau are in 7-1. Okay, supti, suptau. And then laya, laye. So ahankara laya. Laya means the absorption or resolution of the ahankara. The going in, laya really means the going into unmanifest condition is laya. So when there is the laya of the ahankara, means the going into unmanifest condition of the ahankara, sushuptau, in deep sleep, suptau, supti or sushupti are the same, in deep sleep, when there's the resolution or the going into unmanifest condition of the I notion in deep sleep, okay, both locatives. Bhavet dehaha, the physical body then, bhavet becomes, is in the potential, but the deha, the physical body also becomes a chetanaha, without consciousness, right? There, because, so let's just take a look at, let me finish it. It becomes achetanaha, dehaha, 1-1, achetanaha, 1-1. So the deha, the physical body, becomes achetanaha. In Sanskrit, when you put the word, a letter, the vowel a in front of a noun, like chetan means consciousness, achetana means without consciousness, free from consciousness. Or if a noun begins with a vowel, like atma, the self, anatma, not self. Ishwara, anishwara, right? It negates whatever the noun is. So here, chaitana means consciousness, achaitanaha, free of consciousness, without consciousness. Jada is another, jada means inert, as though. So the dehaha, or you could even say like the dehaha also, becomes achaitanaha, not conscious, because when, well, let me just finish. Dehaha api achetanaha, the body becomes free of consciousness, without consciousness. Then it says, diahankara vikasa ardaha swapnaha. Whereas the dream, this is in deep sleep, what happens in suptau and supti, in the deep sleep, right? The ego goes into an unmanifest condition. And when it goes into an unmanifest condition, the body also is not, you know, staying in manifest condition, is not at that time enjoying consciousness. Because the ego has gone into unmanifest condition, it's not any longer lighting up the physical body for the physical body to be responding as a conscious being. So it's as though without consciousness at that time. So then it says, in the swapna, the dream state, there is the ahankara vikasa ardha is lit up only halfway, right? The ahankara, that I notion, but we'll see the little difference where how we're using I notion, that ahankara, is only half lit, meaning that in the dream state, the physical body is not being illumined in the dream state. In the dream state, actually, you're just dealing with the mind projecting impressions. But there is no association from your standpoint, from the standpoint of the ahankara, with the physical body. You are in a dream state, right? There's no one saying, oh, and the physical body is sleeping. For you, for that ahankara, when you're in the dream state, all that's really existing is that dream state. But there's more, right? So we say it's only half. The ahankara is only half itself. It's only, at a half mast. It's not completely identified with a full upadi. So it says the ahankara is only vikasa half lit in the swapna. But it's sarvaha, it's full, it's complete, it's all of the ahankara is present, jagraha, in the waking state. So from the standpoint of the waking state, the ahankara is fully present. The standpoint of the dream state, it's only half. It's only illumining half of what there is to illumine. In the deep sleep state, it's totally an unmanifest condition. So that's what's being said here. So sarvaha, jagraha, are 1-1, swapnaha is 1-1, ahankara, vikasa, ardha is a compound, is 1-1, all nominatives. Okay? So you have three parts to this. You have, what is this condition of the ahankara, the I notion, in the deep sleep? In deep sleep? Well, it's an unmanifest condition. Right? What's the condition of the ahankara in dream state? It's only half present, it's only half lit, because it does not extending all the way to the waking state. So they call that half, so it's half lit. What is it? What is the condition of the ahankara in the waking state? It's complete, means all of the upadis, all of the conditioning adjuncts, it is properly identified with. Okay, so far so good. Now I want to make a little distinction here on how the Drikdusha Viveka is viewing or talking about the ahankara, which I think is beautiful and very interesting. Often when we talk about the ahankara, we're just talking about, we call it just the I notion, and we're looking at, for the I notion, is something which is going to land on certain upadis. Now, when we use the word upadi sometimes translates as a conditioning adjunct. What we mean by a conditioning adjunct is something that the ahankara can land on and say, I am that. Like, as I said, the glasses are not an upadi, because my ahankara is not going to land on the glasses and say, I am the glasses. My clothes are ripped. Okay, so the ahankara is not going to land on the clothes saying, I am my clothes. So it's not an upadi. For something to be an upadi, you have to have that mistake. There has to be a mistake there where I take myself to be that. To take myself to be that, it itself must be enjoying consciousness. To be enjoying consciousness, remember, it has to be pervaded by sattva. The sattva is that sattva, rajas, and tamas. Sattva is that which reflects consciousness. And so because the sukshma sharira totally pervades the body through the sense of touch, and the sense of touch is sattva, the body is enlivened with consciousness because of that sense of touch, which, being made of sattva, is going to reflect consciousness. So if that which reflects consciousness pervades that which itself is by nature inert, the dead body is inert, it's still going to be as though conscious as long as it's alive, as long as the sukshma sharira is there. Okay, so the body acts as an upadi. Your thoughts act as an upadi. I am happy, I am sad, I am smart, I am stupid. Because the antakarana, The mind itself and all the aspects of the mind are made of sattva. So they reflect consciousness. So the mind can act as an upadhi, as me, I can mistake myself. So upadhi means wherever the ahankara can land. Ahankara means the I-notion. It can only land in upadhi. I can take this body to be me because it reflects consciousness. I can take my sense organs to be me or them to be my sense organs, to be conscious, to enjoy consciousness. Right? Because the sense organs are sattva, they reflect consciousness. I can take myself to be the mind or any qualities of the mind because they are sattva, it reflects consciousness. And so these are all technically called upadhis. Okay? So now we usually say for the ahankara, is that I notion, that mistaken notion, which is brought about by self-ignorance. Because I don't really know who I am. And so even though the body and the mind and the sense organs are objects of my awareness, I can mistake myself to be that. Right? Because of the sattva, they reflect consciousness. And so because I don't know myself, I just take myself. I know that I am a conscious being. The mind is conscious, so I take myself to be the mind. I'm a conscious being, I know that clearly. The body is conscious, so therefore I am the body. Okay, so that's just how we normally are unfolding. But here, there's just a subtle, nice, subtle little difference. And it is this, that because this physical body is pervaded by the sense of touch, for instance, by the sukshma sharira, by the subtle body, and by the sense of touch, it enjoys consciousness. That alone, just that alone, the fact that it enjoys consciousness because of the sattva that reflects the consciousness is pervading the body, that itself is the ahankara. That itself. Because there's no viveka between my being and this reflection of consciousness. So the reflection of consciousness is there, I am that, therefore. Because I have no viveka, the mind has no viveka whatsoever between this which is enjoying consciousness and the one that illumines it. There's no such discrimination. So now this body enjoys consciousness, right? Therefore, I am that. And so the fact that it enjoys consciousness, that experience is there, is the ahankara. The fact that my mind, because the mind is made of sattva and reflects consciousness, because it reflects consciousness, its experience is I am a conscious being. So without words, no words are necessary. It doesn't have to say I am the mind because I am a conscious being. It doesn't have to say anything at all. That is me. Because it is I am a conscious being and the mind is conscious. That's all that is required. Okay? And so now we say, so from the standpoint of these verses, we're just looking at the ego as a given. Whenever there is sattva there that allows for the reflection of consciousness, that itself is the ahankara, right? Because I naturally will take myself to be that, because I am a conscious being, right? How would I know any differently? Think of it like this, so just for your mind, thinking of your mind and your emotions, all of which are made of sattva. There is no thought or emotion that does not enjoy consciousness. Every thought, every emotion, every memory, every vritti, vritti means thought modification, any activity in the mind itself is sattva, that means that it by nature reflects consciousness, any vritti, vritti really means activity. When we say antakarana vritti, it means any activity of the mind. Swamiji always called that activity of the mind a thought modification. But sometimes if you just say activity of the mind, that's a little bit more general, and it includes like all of your emotions, all of your imaginations, whatever the mind is capable to do, that activity of the mind enjoys consciousness. Or we can say any thought modification, whether it be in the form of an imagination, or in the form of a memory, or in the form of a sorrow or happiness or a buddhi, some intellection or clarity, or just the manas, the fluctuating mind, or the negative emotions, all of these things, whatever is taking place in the mind, every single vritti, without exception, is conscious. It is conscious because the material of the mind, no matter what form it's taking, is sattva. And sattva is like a mirror to the sun. The mirror, by its nature, reflects. It's a reflecting surface. So wherever that mirror is, that reflection is taking place. So for my mind, wherever the mind is, whatever the vritti is, whatever the activity is, it enjoys knownness because it reflects consciousness. See what I mean? So then we would say that that mere fact of that reflection of consciousness being there is the ego, unless there is knowledge, right? So I don't have to even use the word ego. So now in this case, so thinking of it like that, when the ahankara, now the ahankara means just that simple reflection of consciousness, you know, that me that's brought about by the sattva. When the ahankara is in unmanifest condition, as it is in deep sleep. So let's look at deep sleep, thinking of it like this. In deep sleep, the whole of the mind, right, goes into an unmanifest condition. So at that time, there is no subject-object relationship. There is not even anyone saying, I am in deep sleep. So any knowership or doership or enjoyership, it's not there in the deep sleep state. So the whole mind itself is in unmanifest condition. Since the mind is in unmanifest condition, in that condition there is no reflection of awareness, right? Because the mind is in its causal state. If the mind is in its causal state, then the ahankara is in its causal state. Because the mind is sattva, itself is sattva, sattva goes into unmanifest condition, so does the sense of me, so does the reflection of consciousness, all of that is in unmanifest condition at the time. Just think now for a moment of your deep sleep, not your dream, but your deep sleep state. What do you know at that time? If you know something, you're awake, right? But you don't know anything. Now what happens, and there is no subject object. There's nobody even there to say, I don't know anything. I'm deep sleeping, I don't know anything. There's nobody there to say that. Right, so it is totally unmanifest condition when you're deep sleeping. When you wake up, when the mind comes back into, or the ahankara, as Shankara says, the ahankara comes back into manifest condition, then it will have something to say. It'll say, you know, when I'm in deep sleep, I'm as though not there. There is no duality that I'm experiencing. There's no subject-object relationship. I don't know anything, right? And so you're having actually a memory of that unmanifest condition, because the mind, which is sattva, even though it's an unmanifest condition, it's still sattva, right? And so when it comes out and is functional again, it'll tell you, in terms of a memory, this is what that deep sleep condition is like. I can't even say anything. I'm just not even there. I'm there, but I'm there in a causal condition, so I'm not available. Only available when I wake up. So that's what they mean when they say the ahankara goes into unmanifest condition in deep sleep. It goes into laya. It resolves in the deep sleep, only to come up again, to come out again. Same ahankara comes awake again, comes up again when you wake up. Now say you go into the deep sleep condition, and then from there, the ahankara means the mind that is reflecting consciousness. That ahankara goes into a dream state. Now it's in the dream state. We say that is at half mass. That's half position. It's enjoying now half of its full potential. Because in dream state, there is no identification with this physical body that is here breathing, sleeping, right? But there's no identification with it. So from the standpoint of the ego, you know, of the ahankara, there is no body. It has no experience of a body whatsoever. You can't even say, you know, I really have a body, but it's just not here right now because I'm in the dream state. No. It its reality is that dream state, which we say, as we'll see in the next verse, is formed by the impressions that are in unmanifest condition in memory. And so those impressions are come up into manifestation in the dream state, and then that is becomes my experience. And even in the dream state, this idea of doership, kartritvam or bhoktritvam, we have enjoyership. Enjoyership just means I'm just experiencing what's going on there. I'm not accruing karma in the dream. I'm not subject to any rules, or I have to be a good person or a bad person. I don't want to be a bad person, I want to be a good person, I want to accrue a lot of good karma so I can get a better next birth. All of this type of thing is not there. There's just the experience of the dream and whatever things are unfolding in the dream. It's the experience of impressions. Psychologically, we can do a lot with those impressions. But we're not talking psychologically now. We're just talking about the fact that there is such a thing as the dream. And when you have that, when that dream comes up, the sattva, the antakarana is there. The sattva is there, but it's not identified fully with all of the upadis available to it. That doesn't happen until only in the waking state. When we say the waking state, that means now my physical sense organs, and this physical body are awake. Means that the antakarana, the mind, is pervades all the way to up to the physical body. So now the physical body itself enjoys consciousness, right? Because the sattva, that material that reflects consciousness, which is really the material that the mind is made of, that sattva now pervades all the way up to the physical body and the physical sense organs. And now I can perceive this physical body, I can be aware of it, and I can see the world, I can hear the world, my sense organs are functioning. In the dream state, the sense organs, these physical sense organs, eyes and ears, etc., the physical body are not functioning, right? The mind, the antakarana, the sukshma sharira, the mind is not pervading. Sukshma sharira, the rajas, the prana, is functioning. The organs of action aren't functioning, but the prana is functioning. Otherwise, what if the prana withdraws? We're in trouble. Yeah. Prana is functioning. The vital force is functioning. So the body is living, but you can't use the body, right? Nor do you perceive, or are you aware of the body? That's what's happening in the dream state. And so the ahankara is not in full bloom, right? Be in full bloom. It has to be identified also with the physical body. To be identified with the physical body, all that means is that the antakarana, which is sattva, and the sense organs are pervading this physical body, so that they are now, the physical body is now experienced as a conscious being, as me. So I can say it's experienced as a conscious being, but what I really mean, and this is why Shankara is saying it this way, it is me. This body becomes me. Because me that I am is the conscious being. Right? Conscious being is pervading this. Now this is me. Conscious being is pervading the dream. The dream is me. Conscious being is in totally unmanifest condition in terms of the sattva, in terms of the chit chaya, the reflection of consciousness is an unmanifest condition. Then I am still there, I'm not having a death experience. Right? I'm not even having any fear. I love deep sleep. I love deep sleep, but what Swamiji says, I love deep sleep, because in deep sleep I have total ignorance. I just don't know anything. I am, but I know nothing. So nothing's there to cause me any trouble whatsoever. So deep sleep is wonderful, total ignorance. It's partial ignorance that's a real problem. Deep sleep just said, let me just be in deep sleep. Edward always says, I can repeat what Edward says because everybody listens to the tapes and they all hear him talking all the time. So one thing you always say, I love deep sleep. I really love my deep sleep. I just One thing I really look forward to in the day. No problems. No problems. So he has all of these issues that he has to deal with his work and all of these things. You know. He's a landlord and he has property and all of these, and there's always these kind of these stressful problems and all of that. But when he goes to sleep, everything is good. No worries. No worries. Everything's perfect, beautiful. And the alarm goes off. No. Swamiji will go do long stories about how we prepare for deep sleep, you know. Get a really comfy bed, good mattress, a really good mattress. And then you should get a good down comforters, really comfy comforters, nice soft pillows, you know. And then the lighting should be perfect. Some of us like it to be just pitch black. I like all the windows to be open, very dark. This is perfect. Okay, then I can just cuddle up, and blot out everything. You know, we get into those just comfortable states that we can have deeply sleep. Nothing is there except for me. Nothing is there except for me. Atman doesn't go to sleep. Consciousness doesn't meet. Me never goes to sleep. It's just all of the work, all of the, you know, all of the stress and strain is just eliminated for that time being. And I simply am, without the experience of the stresses and strains of the world. So deep sleep is something that we love. So anyway, when we're talking about the conscious mind, or the mind which is me, you know, or my sense organs, my, it's upadhi. You know. These are my sense organs, means I am a seer, I am a hearer, or my physical body. That my is the ahankara, but the ahankara really is that sattva being pervading the thing that I am not. And that gives the illusion of oneness, that I am, that this body is me, the conscious being. And until that viveka takes place, the ahankara is going to very naturally be there, identified with whatever manifests or reflects consciousness. Until a mirror is held up, which we call the Upanishads, act as a mirror, as a means of knowledge, holding up to you to make you see, to recognize the self that is actually your being, right, which never falls asleep and is never dreaming and is never in a waking state either. I am the, myself is the one that is the luminary because of the satchit, the conscious being, the luminary because of which all these things are known. I myself am not doing anything at all. I simply am. But how can the mind know that? Right? Because from the standpoint of the mind, its means of knowledge are just to look outward, to experience this world. That's what the mind is for, and the sense organs are their sphere of reality is, their sphere of knowledge is the to experience the world, and to experience what is going on within the universe. That's what they're good for, and that's what they're capable of doing. They can't turn around and look at awareness, the awareness that's illumining them. That's totally out of range. They're not able to do that, right? Just to try to imagine, okay, I'm looking this way, now let's look this way. No, not at my body, not at my mind, not at my sense organs. Let's just look this way at me. The Vedanta can do that for you. The Upanishads do exactly that for you. That's why they're a means of knowledge. But your sense organs can't do that. Your sense organs, your eyes can see color, your ears can hear sound. Your sense of touch can feel. Your sense of taste can taste. Your sense of smell can smell. That's what they can do. They can't turn around and look at the awareness that's illumining them, right? But because you are there, just because the sense organs don't have the capacity to turn around and look at you, doesn't mean that you cannot be known, that you cannot be recognized in your own right. You just need a means of knowledge to do that for you. And that's why the Upanishads are viewed from beginningless time. We say, from the standpoint of the Upanishads, they function as that means of knowledge to hold up a mirror, or to, using words, direct your mind to the recognition of your own nature, and they can, words can do that because you're there. If you weren't there, then of course words couldn't do that. But because you're there, the words utilized in a particular way that are the teaching methodologies of the Upanishads are holding up a mirror to make you see, to recognize yourself. Yourself is there to be recognized because you are actually the self-evident conscious being that is the me experience that makes me me. And I am always here. So now we're just through, like Drik Drishti Viveka, the seer seeing differentiation, we're taking away from you, we're undressing you, so to speak. We're taking off the dress of the body and taking off the dress of the sense organs and taking off the dress of the mind and of the emotions and of your knowledges and of your ignorances and of time and space itself. We're taking off all of these dresses so that you can just recognize yourself, you know, as you are, without being only seen or recognized through these coverings. So that's what the teaching methodology of the Upanishads very systematically, every Upanishad is doing this systematically in its own way. And the Prakarna Granthas, like Drik Drishti Viveka, explanatory texts, are doing exactly what the Upanishads do, but and expanding it and making it much more accessible to the student. That's what these texts are meant to do. So, let's go on to the next verse, which is continuing this discussion about the nature of the antikarana, the upanishad.
Antakarana vrittischa
Chitti chaya ikyamagata
Vasana kalpaye swapne
Bodhe kshaya vishayan vahi Bodhe
Antakarana vrittihi cha chitti chaya aikyam, it's a compound, chitti chaya aikyam agata vasanaha kalpayet swapne bodhe kshaihi vishayan bahihi. So antakarana vrittihi is one nominative, cha and. Chitti chaya aikyam is accusative, singular, one, compound. Agata is past passive participle, agata, feminine. Vasanaha is 2, 3, accusative, plural. Kalpayet, potential, 3, 1. Swapne, 7, 1. Bodhe, 7, 1. Akshaihi, 3, 3, Vishayan, 2, 3, Bahihi, indeclinable. Well, here it says, antakarana vrittihi, thought modification. So vritti means activity of the antakarana, the activities of the mind. So another way of translating antakarana means mind, vritti is like an activity, often translated as thought modification. Okay. So the antakarana vritti, nominative singular, chitti chaya aikyam agata, has, agata means it's come into, which has come, the antakarana vritti, the thought modification, has come into aikyam, identity, with the chitti chaya, same as chit chaya, with the reflection of consciousness, right? So what this means, the antakarana vritti, any thought modification, doesn't matter what it is, because the material of the mind is sattva, reflects consciousness, then every vritti that you have is a reflection, enjoys that reflection of consciousness. And so therefore there's an ahankara. So no matter what the thought is, because it reflects consciousness, an ahankara, the ahankara is a given there. Okay. So it has an identity, so it says every single vritti, it has an identity with the reflection of consciousness, which means that the ahankara, that ego, that sense of ego of me is there. So think of the ahankara as that sense of me which is really false, okay? It's true, the sense of me, the me is true, But that me is identical with the mind, is one with the mind, that is what's false. Sense of me is true. And that's a good thing, because otherwise you have to throw out yourself to recognize some big me. Nobody wants that. I want to know who I am. Who I am is this me that is here right now. This me that I know to be me is just the only problem with the me. There's no problem with my me experience, this experience, my self experience. It's that I take that self, my self experience, to belong to the mind, or to be one with, Aikin means one, identical with the vrittis, to be identical with the body, to be identical with the sense organs, because of the chitti chaya, because of the reflection of consciousness due to the sattva, right, of the material. The sattva, the material naturally reflects consciousness, so I naturally take myself to be that. So now what it says, this antakarana vritti, any thought modification you have, you know, enjoys that aikya, that oneness with the reflection of consciousness because of the sattva. The antakarana is made of sattva. And so any thought you have is going to enjoy consciousness and therefore will be the ego, the ahankara. And so then it says, so these antakarana vrittis, these thought modifications that belong to the mind, vasanaha kalpayet swapne. In the dream, these vrittis are creating, are projecting vasanas. Vasanas is plural, accusative plural. So in the dream state, these antakarana vrittis are creating or projecting vasanas. They're taking the form of vasanas. Now, what a vasana is simply an impression. So say the chitta, your memory, is filled with vasanas, all, you know, billions, countless sensory impressions, even emotional impressions of all kinds. So you can imagine, say there are infinite impressions are there, you know, in the chitta, in the memory, in terms of the vasanas. In the dream state, the vrittis that are being projected are those vasanas, right? So the dream is not projecting, it's not using the sense organs. It's drawing on these countless, infinite sensory and emotional impressions. The dream carries a lot of emotion in it also. There are emotional impressions, there's just every type of impression that can be stored in the chitta, in the memory, are utilized in the dream. And they're not utilized in the dream following the same rules as the waking state uses. So these vasanas can be combined in all kinds of different ways, you know? Like you can be a human being with a dog's body and horns on your head. It doesn't, if that's the necessary impression, if that's the impression that it's wanting to convey, it can easily do that because all of these impressions are there and it can scramble them up in whatever way it wants to, you know? And also all different kinds of emotions and movements and the earth and the places where you're living can look in all types of different ways, but all of the differences are just combinations of impressions. The impressions don't go outside of the realm of the five sense, of the five elements. You know, they don't go outside of that realm. They just scramble them in useful ways. In order to convey a message, as Jung will say, every dream is trying to tell you something that you don't know. It's a different subject matter, but every dream is trying to tell you something that you don't know. It's a message from the unconscious. So you should always receive those dreams and think about them, he'll say. Because otherwise, it's like, say, some friend is continually writing you, you know, but you never bother to open the envelope. So after a while, they'll just say, I'm not writing this person anymore. So if you value, you know, the richness of the dreams that come your way, then pay some attention to them. That's a different subject matter. For us, what's being said here is that what's the material of the dreams? It's the sense impressions, all of the different impressions that are stored in the chitta. So the mind, the antakarana vrittis, are make use of those sense projections to project the dream. Okay? And so to project the vasanas. So the projection of those vasanas are what is taking place in dreams. So it's the antakarana, the vrittis, thought modifications, making use of those senses, those impressions, they're stored in the citta, utilizing those to create the dream. Kapiyat means to make the dream happen, to create the dream. Then it says, Bodhe, in the waking state, these antakarana vrittis, with the help of the sense organs. Aksha means eyes, and akshahi in the plural. Aksha also means sense organs, all five sense organs. So with the sense organs, in the bodhe, in the waking state, the sense organs then utilize, using the sense organs, they create the vrittis through the sense organs that are of external objects. So bahihi means external, vishyas means the objects. So the objects of all of the sense organs are perceived, through the sense organs to create vrittis in the mind, right? With the help of the sense organs, thought modifications are being created in the mind. In the dream, it's with the help of the vasanas, the impressions, that the dream world is being created. But in terms of the waking state, it's the sense organs that are creating the vrittis, the thought modifications in the mind, which I'm then relating to. And those vrittis are, those vishyas are external. In other words, my sense organs are perceiving these external objects, which are creating thought modifications in my mind, which are known to me. So he's just kind of giving the territory here. One thing I think is really wonderful to understand about, that's really helpful in terms of gaining this knowledge, I think. Whatever you're experiencing, whether it be a perception in the waking state utilizing your sense organs, or whether it be in a dream state. A dream state can be happening in the waking state as an imagination. Dream state means I'm imagining something and I'm not dependent upon my sense organs. That's the dream state. So that can happen in the waking state also when I'm daydreaming, for instance, or imagining. That falls into the category of dream. Waking state means that the perceptions are coming into my mind, forming a vritti, a thought modification, born of sensory data. So my sense organs have to be involved for it to be a waking state. But now, whether my sense organs are involved, giving me a thought modification, which is then illumined by consciousness, or whether it's a dream state where my sense organs are not involved, still, I am illumining that vritti, which is giving me my experience. Whether it's the experience of a dream state or a waking state, both are equally vrittis. It's just what the thought modification is drawing on is different. For the dream state, it's drawing on vasanas, on sensory impressions and impressions stored in the citta, in the memory. In the waking state, it's drawing on the sense organs to give me those thought modifications which should be true to the external world that I'm perceiving if my sense organs are working well and it's light and all of this, the light is adequate and all of that. There should be a direct correlation between the external object and what the sense organ is perceiving, what the vritti I have in my mind. Okay. But the point is this. Both are vrittis. Okay. So let's look at, I want you to kind of understand something here about how strong in this waking state the Dehatma Buddhi is, my identification with this physical body is. It's unbelievably strong. Because I want you to just give you this little exercise. I want you to just imagine, as though this will classify as a dream state, you can imagine yourself sitting in this room, right? Say you just close your eyes, you imagine yourself sitting in this room. You see yourself. Maybe we shouldn't do it in this room because you'll still be identified with the body. So let's do it like this. You imagine yourself and you're with your friends walking along this beautiful beach, where we are, this beautiful beach in Crete and Yoga Rocks. You're taking a beautiful walk, you know, along the beach with your friends. And so now you're having this imagination. And when you're having that imagination, now you can come back from the imagination. I can ask you some questions about it. When you're having that imagination of yourself walking along with all of your friends, if I tell you that your being, the conscious being that you are, is pervading that entire imagination, would you agree with me?
Yeah.
Would you say, and in that entire imagination that I have, I pervade the whole imagination. I can also say, would you agree that the whole imagination comes from you, is sustained by you, and resolves into you? Because it's your imagination, right? So it comes from you. That means it doesn't have any being apart from you, because I'm asking you to imagine it. So now this imagination comes from you, and now it is here. And so now that it is here, while it is here, the imagination is. It exists. Everything in it exists. All of the people exist. Because it's borrowing your existence, in fact, right? You couldn't say your imagination doesn't exist, but that imagination, that vritti, exists as long as it is there, right? Because it's borrowing your own self, your own consciousness. And you would also say, and the whole imagination is known. And oddly enough, not only is the whole imagination known, all of the characters walking around in that imagination, you know, are seen through their own sense organs and looking at the ocean and looking at the beach from out of their own eyes, right? And at the same time, I'm seeing the whole imagination. So I'm the Ishwara, I'm the Lord of that imagination, right? Because I'm identified with the whole thing. For me, the whole imagination is known. But also if I'm identified with a character in the imagination, I'll be experiencing that same imagination from the standpoint of the character, from the sense organs of the character. So I think that when I'm describing this imagination for you, you can probably relate to it. Is that correct? And also, when you're describing we're describing this imagination, you don't have, with even the character you're identified with in the imagination, a dehatma buddhi of any consequence. Dehatma buddhi means where I am identifying myself with that body. But the body that I'm identified with, I'm speaking to the body, I'm seeing the body and all that, but all the while, I'm knowing that I am also free of that body. Is that true? Just think about it. You have an imagination. That whole imagination comes from you, sustained by you, resolves into you. You're very clear that it's an imagination. You enjoy having the imagination. But the fact that it's an imagination is known to you. The character you're identified with, even if you're looking out of the eyes of the character, you know that that character is what we call mithya. It's not really me, you know, but I get to enjoy being that character in the imagination. Right? But I don't have that dehatma buddhi where I'm scared to death the imagination is going to come to an end or I'm going to die or all of these kind of things. It's not there, really there, because I know the order of reality that this whole imagination enjoys. That the order of reality, that it comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me, every part of it. And it's one great big story. It's my story. Not the individual story, the whole is the story that all of the individuals are playing a part in, because it's my imagination, right? So the imagination is fun then, you know? Now, if I ask you to have, right now, a waking state experience of this room and of yourself in this room. So, of course, if you're using your sense organs to gain a thought modification, because it's only a thought modification, you're getting a thought modification of this room, which, of course, includes this physical body, you know, and it includes your mind and your sense organs and everything, because your body, mind, sense organs are also known, and you are sitting here in this room, and so you are part of the perception. Your body, mind, sense organs is included in the perception of this room. Is that right? You can't say no, because otherwise you'd be invisible. Everybody else is in the room, I'm not in the room. But of course, we can all see each other, so we are all in the room. Okay? So here I am in the room. I'm having a perception of the room, which includes this body, mind, sense organs. Now, the actual experience that I'm having is of the antakarana vritti, the thought modification that is given to me from the sensory data coming in through my sense organs into my mind to give me the thought modification, which is really not any different than the thought modification of the imaginary walk, right, on the beach. Both are thought modifications. Both are made of the same sattva material. Both involve the same five elements and elementals. One of them is generated by sensory data, and one of them is generated by vasanas, by sense impressions. But in terms of what I am experiencing this antakarana vritti, this activity of the mind, right? And so, now, why is the activity, the vritti, thought modification, that is generated by sensory perception considered to be so much more real than the vritti, thought modification, generated by sensory impressions? Because in terms of the order of reality, both are exactly the same. Both are made of the same citta, both are made of the same sattva. Both are equally pervaded by consciousness, not less. This vritti, this experience, this vritti that you're experiencing that includes the imaginary you and friends walking through it, is pervaded by consciousness. I am the self of the whole vritti. Okay? You see that? I'm the self of the whole vritti. This vritti that is given to me through sensory perception, I also am pervading the entire vritti equally. Also, my being, the conscious being that pervades the entire vritti, is not contained by any of it, right? I am pervasive to the whole thing. Otherwise, the vritti can't be known. So that's a very interesting situation. But I have a dehatma buddhi in this vritti, not in this one. Dehatma buddhi means a total identification with my body. In this vritti, rather than this vritti, and which prevents me initially from recognizing that consciousness pervades the entire room. Because your only experience of this room is the vritti. And the vritti is pervaded equally by consciousness. Right? Either vritti. But I say that in reference to the imaginal vritti, it's pervaded that vritti, that thought modification is pervaded by consciousness. You go, yeah, of course, it's my thought. It's my imagination. If I say, would it forget about having my body in the thought modification, if I tell you every thought modification, right, takes place in awareness, is pervaded by awareness. Just saying that alone, every thought is pervaded by awareness. That means in my experience, the awareness, consciousness, is absolutely pervasive, equally pervasive, not less here and more there, that it's equally pervasive. But when this body, mind, sense organs in the waking state is included in that, my identification with this physical body is so much that I am not able to recognize that it is my being that is illumining the entire room. Okay? That I, in fact, am not contained. I am not contained. I am as much on this side as I am on this side, on that side, on that side. So that's the tremendous power of the Dehatma Buddhi. And there's reasons for it, of course. The perceptions themselves are coming through these eyes that are located in this body. The sense of touch runs through the body. All of these things are so powerfully give me this very, very strong identification with the physical body. But in reality, the self is not contained in the body. It never has been contained in the body. Rather, the body, the room, and the universe is contained in me. I'm not contained. You know? And so, we, at some point, will be able to recognize that the me that is illumining the dream or the imaginal state, and the me that is illumining this waking state where I'm recognizing myself in terms of the body. I recognize both myself as being not contained, and I recognize the sense of self brought about by the sattva. Right? Because sattva pervades this body, mind, sense organs, there is a sense of me. Because of the chit-chaya, because of the reflection of consciousness, there's this sense of me that belongs to this body. For the ajnani, that is my reality. The sense of me brought about by the sattva pervading this body, mind, sense organs. That's all I know. Right? When you gain knowledge, you recognize something else, that the conscious being which reflects in this body, in the sattva, is itself free of the body. It's a little bit like this recognizing that the sun is its own experience, and it has nothing really to do with the reflection of the sun. The sun is its own experience, and there is the reflection of the sun. I have to recognize my own nature, you know, which has nothing to do with the body or the mind or the sense organs from its own standpoint. And that, in fact, every experience I have, every single experience, is pervaded and has me as its adhishtana, me as its truth. I have to be able to recognize that, and at the same time, recognize this ahankara. You know? The ahankara is this chit, this I notion, this chit chaya, this reflection of me. So initially, I only know myself in reference to the body, mind, sense organs as this the sattva reflecting my own self. I make no distinction whatsoever between the reflection of the sattva and my own being that illumines that. I make no difference. I have no idea. Once I have that idea, once I understand it, then there's the chit-chaya, you know, that's in terms of the sattva being experienced in this body, mind, sense organs, that causes the sense of me, the sense of me to belong to this. I have that identification. And then I recognize that actually the me experience has nothing to do with this sattva. It has nothing to do with the sattva. That myself is illumining both the knower and the known. And that's the viveka. In the Katha Upanishad it says, this viveka is like walking on a razor. It's like walking, you can fall off on either side so easily. Because it's very, very subtle. You know? And you know it's not subtle, but initially it's subtle. Because the mind is so close to you. You know? So close to you that you don't make a differentiation. The mind being sattva, it reflects awareness. You are the awareness, which in itself shines back in a sense. You know? So you have to recognize the me that illumines the mind as being free of the mind, that type of thing. You don't have to worry about it in terms of the table or the chair or anything like that. You have to worry about it, you have to deal with it wherever there's a new padi, wherever the conditioning magic is there. So it'll go on a little bit more about this, we'll see.
Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo.